Hi, I'm Sarah Lee, and joining me is my co-host,
Juliana.
And welcome to Murder Psyche Podcast, a podcast where we dive into old and new cases and try and figure out why the killers did it. We are here for you every week with a new case, and if you would like to recommend any cases, you can check out our Instagram or Twitter, both at Murder Psyche Pod. We also have a YouTube channel called Murder Psyche Podcast. If you would like to watch us, this true crime case was recommended to me by my lovely mother,
Celine.
So thank you, mother. Disclaimer, there's a lot of things that happen in this episode, such as, well, obviously, murder. Murder and brutality of minors. Mentions of incest, rape, and pedophilia. So if any of that is too much for you, you can click off. We understand. We won't judge you for that if that's what you want. There's always next case. Viewer discretion is advised. Also, a quick announcement before we get into this episode. I've started college, and Juliana will be starting college soon.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, it's at home, so it's convenient for the podcast, but...
Yeah. Since we're just getting busy in general, the episodes are going to be every other week as opposed to every week. Now let's get into the episode. If you've listened to any of our past episodes, you know I don't like saying the identity of victims who are minors, so I won't be saying their actual names. On March 10th, 1928, a 9-year-old boy, who will go by the name Michael, went missing on his way to the movie theater. The last known sighting of him was by a neighbor at the corner of Pasadena Avenue and North Avenue 23 in Lincoln Heights, Los Angeles, around 5 p.m. Once the missing case became public, many became outraged. At the time, the Los Angeles Police Department was already under investigation for several corruption scandals, and their inability to find Michael was just another case of incompetent police. So with the nation yelling at the LAPD, they felt like they had to do something. Also during this time, Michael's father was in prison for robbery. So he told police to look into a rival gang because he believed the rival gang wanted to get revenge. The father worked somewhere in the prison and he had to report other prisoners if they had done something wrong, which could lead to fellow prisoners wanting to seek revenge. None of my sources said if the LAPD seriously looked into this, but nothing came of this tip. The LAPD did look into two other tips, though. The police looked along Lincoln Park Lake, but were unable to find anything. They also received a tip that a man at a gas station saw Michael in the back of a couple's car, but again, nothing came of this. In August 1928, police in Illinois picked up a boy who looked really similar to Michael, but was named Arthur Kent. Arthur told police that his father abandoned him, so they placed him with a temporary family. He later told police that he was actually Michael and was just trying to protect his father when he avoided their questions. So, LAPD contacted Michael's mother and told her that they had found Michael. However, once shown the photo of Michael, she immediately said that wasn't Michael. The police captain, J.J. Jones, talked her into, quote, trying it out, end quote, the boy for a while. 3 weeks later, Michael's mother brought the boy back to the police station. She brought with her Michael's dental records and signed statements from people who knew Michael, saying that this boy was not him. Instead of listening to the mother, J.J. Jones called her a lunatic and claimed she was just trying to make the LAPD look bad. So he called a code 12, which allowed police to get rid of troublemakers by throwing them in psychiatric hospitals. Thus, Michael's mother was sent to a psychiatric ward in the Los Angeles County General Hospital. Fast forwarding to May 16th, 1928, two brothers disappeared on their way home in Pomona. One of the brothers was 10 years old and the other was 12 years old. Soon after their disappearance, their parents received strange letters that were allegedly from the brothers. The first letter stated that the brother had run away to Mexico. The second letter stated they planned to stay missing as long as they can become famous. Police saw no connections between Michael and the missing brother's case. Not much else is said about their disappearance and how police handled it, but I'm sure we can guess how they did. Quick backtrack to February. The decapitated body of an unidentified Hispanic boy was found in a ditch wrapped in a burlap sack in La Puente. A neighbor complained to the police saying a man mistreating a young Mexican boy, but the police never seemed to take account of this complaint and didn't connect this body to that complaint. Now you must be wondering, who is this man the neighbor is complaining about? That man was Gordon Stewart Northcutt. Gordon was born on November 9th, 1906. Saskatchewan, I apologize if I'm saying that wrong, Canada. And was raised in British Columbia. He was raised with his sister, Winfred, his mother, Sarah Louise Northcutt, and his father, Cyrus George Northcutt. In 1924, Gordon and his parents moved to Los Angeles. Soon after moving, Gordon asked his father to buy a ranch in Wineville. With the help of his father and his nephew, we'll call the nephew Matt, they built a chicken coop on the property. Gordon convinced his sister and her husband to let Matt stay with him in Wineville. So on this ranch lived Gordon, his mother, and Matt. Allegedly, his father was in a psychiatric hospital, but I was never able to confirm this. In September 1928, Matt's sister, Jessie, traveled from British Columbia to Los Angeles to visit Matt because she became concerned over the letters she was receiving from Matt. During the visit, Gordon made sure to never leave Jessie and Matt alone. However, this plan failed when Jessie managed to get Matt alone and he confessed that Gordon had not only been sexually abusing him, but was also a murderer. This shocked Jessie for obvious reasons. When she finally went back to British Columbia, she told their mother, Winfred. Winfred contacted US authorities to tell them that her brother had kidnapped and was holding her son in California. Immigration officers found Matt and took him into custody because of the complaints from his mother and told authorities the tales of murder, pointing out newly excavated grave sites on the ranch. Furthermore, Matt claimed he wasn't Gordon's only victim. Gordon had kidnapped, molested, beaten, and killed several young boys with the help of Gordon's mother, Sarah Louise Northcutt. He had also forced Matt to participate. Continuing, Matt said quicklime was used to dispose of the remains, and the bones had been dumped in the desert. On September 17th, police went to the ranch to see if Matt's claims were true. Upon entering the house, investigators found a book checked out to one of the missing brothers. More letters to their parents were written, a child's whistle, and several Boy Scout badges were found. However, nothing in the home could be directly linked to Michael. In the chicken coop, a bloodstained axe and body parts including bones, hair, and fingers of three of the victims that were buried in lime were found. Sadly, no complete bodies were found. Police attempted to apprehend Gordon and his mother, but both had fled to Canada. They did question Gordon's father, Cyrus, who admitted that Gordon confessed to the murders to him. Michael's mother found out about the ranch and its horrors and used this to push about the fate of her son and how her, quote, her son that she got from the police wasn't actually her son. The Los Angeles Police Department continued to call her a lunatic and told the public that Michael was Michael. It wasn't until a handwriting analysis expert came in and concluded that Michael's handwriting was definitely not a match to the samples collected from previous years. The strange R's used was commonly taught in Illinois, but was not found in California. Michael eventually told the truth. He admitted he was actually 12-year-old Arthur Hutchins from Illinois. He continued to admit that he decided to try and pass off as Michael when someone had mentioned he looked like the missing boy and pretended to be Michael so he could go to Hollywood to meet his cowboy hero, Tom Mick. His mother picked him up in Los Angeles and took him back to their Illinois home. This discovery led to Michael's mother being let out of the psychiatric ward, but led to the question of what actually happened to Michael. On September 20th, 1928,
correct?
Yes, dyslexia. Gordon was arrested in British Columbia and his mother, Sarah Louise, in Alberta. In December, the police took Gordon back to his ranch in an attempt to get more information. While there, he verbally confessed to 5 murders, including the brothers, Michael, and the Mexican boy. However, later that day, Gordon only admitted to 1 homicide in a written confession, and that was of the Mexican boy. Gordon's mother confessed to the murder of Michael. She stated she delivered the final blow to the boy and then buried him in a hole near the chicken coop. But the police were never able to find his body. During her trial, Sarah Louise said something that shocked the courthouse along with me. She wasn't Gordon's biological mother. Sarah Louise claimed that, quote, she was actually his grandmother because her husband had raped her daughter Winfred and Gordon was Winfred's son, end quote. December 31st, 1928, Sarah Louise was sentenced to life imprisonment and spent the rest of her life at Tehachapi. I don't know how to say that, but we're going to go with Tehachapi State Prison. During her sentencing, Sarah Louise claimed her son was innocent and made a variety of bizarre claims about his parentage, including he was the illegitimate son of an English nobleman, that she was Gordon's grandmother, and that he was the result of incest between her husband, George Cyrus, and their daughter, Winfred. She also claimed that as a child, Gordon was sexually abused by the entire family. She ended up dying in prison of old age. In January, Gordon stood trial for the murders of the Mexican boy and the brothers. During his trial, he fired his lawyers because he felt they weren't doing their job correctly and claimed to have an incestuous relationship with Sarah Louise and that his father had molested him. Prosecutors claimed that for years, Gordon mixed business with pleasure in Riverside, abducting boys and hiding them out in his ranch, renting his victims to wealthy Southern Californian pedophiles, where when he got tired of the boys, they were shot or brained with an axe. Their flesh dissolved with quicklime and their bones transported to the desert for disposal. On February 13th, 1929, Gordon was sentenced to death by hanging. On October 2nd, 1930, Gordon's sentence was carried out. Before the trap was sprung, he screamed, "A prayer. Please say a prayer for me." This case shocked the nation and showed how Gordon was able to get away with, how much Gordon was able to get away with before the police even started to care about the disappearances. Although his kill count is unknown, it's estimated to be as low as 3 to as high as 20. On November 1st, 1930, city officials changed Wineville to Miraloma, which means view from the hill in Spanish. This name change helped the town to disassociate from the horrific acts on that poultry farm. In 2008, the horrors of the Wineville chicken coop murders were reintroduced when the Clint Eastwood film Changeling was released. The story reflects Christine Collins' attempts to recover her son, Michael. The Changeling shows Michael's mother's perseverance to overcome the unjust law enforcement system and to learn the truth about her son.
We have a serial murderer on our hands. Okay.
Representation for my hometown.
Woo!
Fun fact, I was born in Miraloma, California. So to find out about this case, especially knowing that it was 10 minutes away from my house, mm-hmm. was actually quite shocking. Because it's like,
you're like, yo, I can walk there.
I would see it all the time. I saw the like little chicken ranch. And I would always be like, what is it? And my mom didn't know what it was about. But she said that like she felt like something was calling her there. She was like, something's just calling me to go over there. She never went to the chicken coop farm.
I wonder what would happen if she did.
Well, it was abandoned.
Well, true, but like you can still feel the energy of like...
Yeah, my mom would have gone insane in there.
Yeah.
And then allegedly, my father went in there and he left because he got bad vibes.
Probably.
He like walked in, he was like, peace. I get bad vibes from here.
I've walked into places and be like, yo, vibes ain't good in here. And I've walked out before. I mean, not rude or anything, but just been like,
I can't do this.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Gordon Northcott. I just want to analyze him because he was a serial murderer, but then the things that make him a serial murderer is like the biological, environmental, and social factors. So he claimed he was sexually abused by his father and molested mm-hmm. by his father, and he also had the weird incestual relations claimed by his mother. And if yeah. any of that is true, and he was raised in that environment, in that normal
environment, that would fuck him up.
Like that normalized it, that messes with his emotional development, and like there's this Kohlberg stages of moral development where it says when kids start developing like law and order, they realize they're doing what they're supposed to do because it's valuable and important. And if what his dad thinks he's supposed to do is valuable and important
is be a sex object to him,
exactly, he thinks that's the norm, and it's not.
Mm-mm.
And it's not like you can, it's very difficult to like change this when you get older, but it's implanted in your brain because you're a child and you're developing into these norms, not growing as a person, if that makes any sense. And also, like, his uncle also died in serving life in prison for murder, I found out. And I was like, oh, well, I guess he biologically kind of has a history of his family being kind of fucked up. And his dad eventually committed suicide. So,
oh, damn.
Yeah, I mean, Gordon Cyrus committed suicide. His uncle committed murder and died in prison because he got a life sentencing. And I bet, I mean, as far as social factors, I mean, he probably, I don't know what his life was like in Canada, but I don't think he had the resources to get help or anything. I think that's probably most likely what made him into that. And honestly, what I think is, like, he didn't have the ability to empathize with his victims because, one, he thought it was normal, and, like, two, like, kids' development, depending on how young he was when he started getting molested or whatever, like, kids develop empathy at, like, as young as 3 years old, but their crucial, like, empathy developing ages is between 15 and 17. If that's fucked up, he might not have the ability to empathize with people.
Mm.
Like kind of psychotic, but with means behind it. So he probably, victims of, like, incestual sexual abuse typically have, like, low self-esteem. They tend to, like, fake body harm. Like, their brain, the power of the mind is so powerful. So, like, they convince themselves that, like, they have a broken leg to the point where, like, they feel the pain of the broken leg, but their leg's not broken.
Oh,
it's a thing.
Like, to save them in a way?
I don't know. It's
assuming if the body's trying to protect you, or your brain is trying to protect mm-hmm. you from something happening.
Well, it might also have to do with the fact that they feel like that's the only way they can seek protection is if they have harm on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because as kids, you can't prove anything unless you have physical harm on you.
Yeah.
So that might be a lot of the reason why sexual abuse victims use that. But I mean, anyway, they have their incestual sexual abuse victims specifically have, like, a distorted form of care and affection towards, like, their friends and family, not just, like, romantic relationships. And in this case, for Gordon, it developed into an erotic response to children, unfortunately. So anyway, that's probably why he came to be why he is to be, and doesn't justify anything.
No, still
really fucked up. And Sarah, I have a feeling she was probably sexually coerced, and she just stood by while her husband did this shit to their family. So, I mean,
a disgrace to the name.
She might have this thing called portrayal blindness, which is like, it's like a weird victim thing where it's like you've been portrayed so much in one moment that your consciousness can't process it, and you kind of just, like, block it out. You don't remember, like, you pretend, like, you don't even, some victims don't even, like, remember what happened.
Oh.
So it might have triggered after the trial, and she might have just been going along with it blindly. I'm probably not explaining this very well. Going along with it blindly because it's just what she's always done, and she doesn't bat an eye because she's blocking it out. And then once the trial happens and stuff is actually being convicted against them, it, like, came back to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, shit, like,
I did all of this.
And I mean, if she's been in that kind of relationship with Cyrus for so long, like, I don't think she was gonna stop Gordon at all.
Yeah.
Like, at that point, like, she's committed to,
she's already seen her husband do it, so why stop her son from doing the exact same thing, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, and he probably has a lot of built up anger and a misguided home life, Gordon does, and he has a place to vent it all out. So
he has his own chicken farm,
and he can do whatever he wants there. And then Matt, which I found out, he had like a wife and two kids. I mean, he passed away.
I think this was after.
This is after. No, not at the time. He did not have a wife and kids at the time. But
he was still a child.
I wanted to make sure he was okay because, damn. I want to make sure he was okay after that, because it's really hard to get off. Like, you helped murder people, and you
I can't imagine how, like, much guilt he held.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, it wasn't him doing it willingly. It was him doing it forced. But still, he might have been like, I'm still murdering kids my age.
Well, he was still, like, coerced into doing it. But it's, once you become an adult and, like, reflecting on that, you can't. Like, it's so much guilt and so much feeling, especially when he probably eventually got a family of his own. Like, he couldn't imagine, probably.
Who knows how much he, like, actually went, because the...
But yeah, he eventually got married and had two kids, and his kids are still alive. Hopefully they're well. I didn't want to like say their names or anything, just for
private reasons. Yeah, I wouldn't bring his like family into this because they have nothing to do with it.
And I can't imagine.
I also didn't want to bring him into it because although he did participate, wasn't his own doing. It was.
Yeah.
He was being manipulated. Well,
I believe he moved onto the farm when he was like 13.
Yeah, he was young.
He was very young. Like, there's nothing he could have done. Like, it wasn't like he was 19 or anything. In fact, I think when he moved onto the farm with Gordon or whatever, like, Gordon was only like 24-ish. Like, he was very young.
He was in his 20s.
So like a 13-year-old and a 20-something-year-old, like, there's really nothing he could have done if that was the only place he had.
But also, like, thinking about this in the time period, people aren't currently at the beginning stages of the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already like downtrodden. They don't feel like well. Mm-mm. Just about the outcome of life. And then for him to be facing this just must have been like even shittier.
I mean, I imagine so.
Yeah, I can't imagine him being happy in any situation.
I mean, shout out to his sister who was like, homegirl was like, nah.
Jesse was like, I'm here,
No, not happening. Sorry.
But also, like, imagine visiting. I know you don't have a brother, but if you were to have a brother and you visited him and he was like, by the way, our uncle's a murderer. Help me.
The whole reason Jesse went down there is because she, like, was reading his
letters
and was like, this is kind of disturbing. Like, if my sister was like texting me and I was like, I'm sorry, what? I would be down there in a heartbeat and be like,
hello,
what's going on? So, no, I totally cahoots to her, but, like, this is such a traumatic situation for him. Like he's prone to have the same qualities of Gordon in his life.
Yeah,
because he endured the same type of abuse,
although not for his entire life, although for a good portion of his life.
I mean, he has increased possibility of developing a personality
especially
disorder.
That's the most vulnerable age.
Mm-hmm.
Your early teen years. So
yeah, exactly. So it's kind of a blessing that it was 13, because he's already kind of been raised in an environment where he kind of knows right from wrong. Mm-hmm. Whereas Gordon was raised in an environment where his moral compass was already skewed.
Yeah.
So his right from wrong was just like, even though he kind of knew the law, like, it doesn't matter. It's all about big brain development. But yeah, he had wife and two children.
That's
so
good for him. I'm glad he tried to find some happiness.
I hope he had happiness in his life. I didn't dig too deep in it, but
yeah, I'm glad that Matt had some portion of good in his life after the fact, because if it was just all downhill from there, I'm sorry, Matt. That's not your actual name, but we're calling him Matt.
That's not his name. You could easily look it up.
Yeah,
like,
you could easily look it up.
We just wanted to be respectful to the family, because he did end up not being a serial murderer, so.
Yay.
He was.
All right, that was my analysis.
If you would like to check out anything we discussed today, you can check out our Instagram, our Twitter. Over there will be our sources, photos, and additional material. Also, if you'd like to listen to us on Apple Podcasts, we appreciate if you would leave a nice review. Have a lovely rest of your day. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Also, if you want to see McCanty, you can look at our YouTube channel.
Yes, right now at this ending, we have McCanty, so watch us on YouTube as well. Bye.
Bye.